Hello, and welcome to A Course in Miracles TV. My name is Robin Duncan, and I am your host. Our topic today is on practical steps to healing. I have a fun and fascinating guest with me. His name is Reverend Tony Panicello. Reverend Tony has served as the executive minister of the Community Miracle Center, CMC, since he co-founded the center in 1987. As part of his spiritual work, Reverend Tony coaches the CMC healing team, teaches weekly classes on A Course in Miracles, writes and edits for the CMC's publication called Miracles Monthly, and he also lectures regularly for CMC's Sunday service. Reverend Tony runs large international ACIM conferences held in various cities and is the administrator for his ACIM Facebook group of over 19,000 members. On a more personal level, Tony offers pastoral counseling for individuals and relationships among his many other functions. Welcome to the show, Tony.
Thank you, Robin. It's wonderful to be here, and I'm really grateful that you asked me to participate. Of course, I'm happy to, and I look forward to spending this time with you and offering our words to Course in Miracles students and curious people everywhere. So welcome to everybody who's watching this video. Thank you for taking the time to watch us. I know Robin's got some wonderful interviews already that she's done with other Course in Miracles people, and I've had a chance to watch some of those, so this is a great resource. So everybody really avail yourself to this resource that Robin is providing.
Thank you, Reverend Tony. Thank you for being here and sharing your time with us. I know you are a very busy guy, so we are all going to be blessed today. Let's go ahead and jump right in.
Okay.
You know, you look like a pretty happy guy. What do you attribute this happiness to?
Well, Course in Miracles says, why are you not rejoicing? You know, we're free from all the problems of the world. A Course in Miracles is a discipline that I believe really offers us healing and practical freedom for everything, for all the so-called, quote, tribulations of the world. So, yeah, I've been studying A Course in Miracles for 40 years, and I'm not always happy, and I have, you know, things that will bother me, but I think my general default is happiness, and A Course in Miracles has certainly helped, and maybe just really given me the permission to allow that to be. I think happiness really is everybody's natural state, but we put filters over it and blocks over it. And A Course in Miracles not only helps us to remove those blocks, but it really gives us permission. You know, A Course in Miracles says, have you really thought about how many opportunities you have had to gladden yourself, but how many of them you have refused? And I always like how that is worded, because it's not talking about some sort of transcendent spiritual bliss experience, which is fine if you manifest it. It just says gladden yourself. It's just like a real simple thing. So I think A Course in Miracles really gives us a very simple permission just to be happy, to be funny, to be silly. And I also want to say that I was raised by, in a household where my mother was silly. She was silly. She was one of those life of the party people. And when we got together for family gatherings and with relatives, she was always making people laugh and making people happy. And I resonate with that. I guess I was drawn to that, to manifest that kind of mother. And, I don't like to think that I am the way I am because of how my mother was, but I have, we were together in a holy relationship, and I have that in my background. So, I just have abundant permission to be happy, and I think A Course in Miracles helps us to just release everything that would prevent us from being happy and gives us that permission to let happiness and joy just really be our ground of being.
You know, I'd have to say when I started studying the Course, that was one of the first things that leaped out to me, was that we don't have to feel guilty. I think that was kind of new to me. I actually thought, wow, I don't actually have to feel guilty. And then, like you say, that natural feeling of happiness just starts to spring forward. You know, a lot of people in our audience, they are not feeling so happy right now. And they might hear, well, you guys are happy, but not me. But, you know, like you say, the Course helps to release those blocks that are in the way of our natural state of happiness. So where you were raised in this kind of light laughter environment, I know I was raised in an environment where miracles were normal, like we came to expect them. And so I think that's a blessing too, that my mind was actually naturally open to miracles. And I just love that you were raised in an environment where there was fun and laughter and silliness, because we can all use a huge dose of that right now, right?
Right now, sure, but always. And you know, happiness is really a state of mind. It's not a state of circumstances. So there's a lot going on in the world, but there's always a lot going on in the world. I mean, there's always things going on in the world. I actually think what's going on right now, for those who, you know, may be watching this at different times, and we got the election going on, and we got the pandemic going on, and the cases are spiking right now. This is November, and a lot of governments, state and county governments, are instituting new shelter-in-place guidelines. So things are restricting. A lot of people aren't happy about that. But there's always things going on that people can be not happy about. And actually, you can be not happy without anything going on. if your mind is going to, you know, focus in that direction, there will be plenty of things for it to find. But we can just as easily, maybe even more easily, find things to celebrate all the time, and joyful things, and relationships, and people, and wholeness, and abundance, and, you know, all kinds of things. And I think A Course in Miracles definitely helps us with that. Now, there's quite a few Course in Miracles students that really use the Course to really be neutral about the world, to just really allow the world to be however it is and feel unaffected by it. So, I mean, and I understand that point of view, and that's valid, but I think that only takes the process part of the way. So, yeah, I want to disengage from those things like the pandemic and the election, whatever. I don't want to be at the effect of those. But I also understand, and for me, I embrace the Course's teaching that tells us that the world's going to change as we change our minds. So I expect to see a reflection of my changed mind in the world. The teacher of God can change his mind in one instant and change the world in the next. So that's how the world really changes. And I expect that. I think that's what miracles are.
You know, from the Course, where it says that we can actually have that happiness that is natural within us by not bringing unhappiness into our day. So that's not so easy all the time, but it can become a habit to not bring unhappiness into your day. You know, one of the things I learned early on was about willingness, and that simply through willingness, I mean, if somebody doesn't feel so happy right now, or they feel burdened by what they see, that they could just be willing to be happy and to be even taught what happiness is. You know, early on, I asked God to teach me about unconditional love. I felt like I knew how to love people, but I didn't really know how to be loved by people in a consistent way. And I was taught, and now I feel like I have that answered. So we have a perfect inner guide and teacher all the time. And for anyone listening that feels like they're not feeling so happy, they could just be willing to be happy, and their inner guide kicks in and shows them how to get it done, right?
Yes, we have a guide, which the Course usually identifies as the Holy Spirit. So we have a guide, the Holy Spirit, always in our minds, always guiding us back to happiness first, and then real joy and bliss and connection and love and peace and comfort and, you know, and all of those things. I mean, there's a continual voice in our minds moving us in that direction. And so, yeah, we just learn to tune into it. It's one thing to hear guidance, but then you have to accept it, embrace it. We have to learn to listen to it, but then we also have to learn to choose it. So I think a lot of people, sometimes they learn to listen to it and they don't complete the process. So it isn't just about getting guidance from the Holy Spirit. You got to get it and embrace it and claim it as yours so that you follow in that direction. And that sometimes is challenging for people. You know, people get challenged by that because it usually means they have to let go the way they've been before, the way they viewed the world, their philosophical orientation on life. A Course in Miracles says we have to be willing to question every value that we have. A lot of people have some pretty sacrosanct values that when the Holy Spirit starts questioning them, bring up fear. And so they retreat. You know, and think that can't possibly be what the Holy Spirit wants. But, you know, that's the nuance, and that's what takes discernment, and that's what takes maybe years of study, you know, to be able to really be tuned into the Holy Spirit's voice and to be able to keep following the Holy Spirit's voice. I mean, in one passage in the Course in Miracles says you have to learn to follow the Holy Spirit through seeming terror. You know, just trusting that he's not going to abandon you there. So, you know, the other day I was talking to some people, and, you know, I was in a class, and I was teaching, and we were reading. I think we probably read that particular passage. And I said, you know, I realized that that's really my primary function as a teacher of A Course in Miracles is just to keep people engaged and keep holding their hands through all those times when this discipline and the Holy Spirit is guiding them through seeming terror. Because the temptation to let go of the Holy Spirit's guidance, it says you're going to be severely tempted. So when the Course says severely tempted, it means severely tempted. So as a teacher, just ushering people, holding their hands through those moments.
Well, thank goodness for you doing that, because I bet a lot of people would have quit a long time ago. But, you know, from my experience, you know, it's not that Holy Spirit is going to impose terror, which I know you didn't mean, but in A Course in Miracles, he does talk about it. And what it seems to me is that when we take this journey back to the awakened mind, our ego, I call it your lower mind, is really going to try to pull all the stops to throw every fear you've ever had in front of you to try to stop or slow down that journey. And so the Holy Spirit is the one that's kind of leading us out of the terror, where our ego is constantly trying to have us face that terror. So it does feel like this balance as we go through the practice. But if we do stay engaged and we do keep asking the Holy Spirit, we do find our way through. You know, some people too might wonder, well, how do I know if I'm listening to the Holy Spirit or the ego? And I know for me, the Holy Spirit's voice makes me feel peaceful, makes me feel safe, calm. And when I'm listening to my ego, I feel anxious, worried, concerned. Do you have any thoughts about that? Like how?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I got some guidance many years ago, and I've talked about this many times, and I bring it up about listening to the Holy Spirit's guidance. So when I was a child, one of the things we did in our household is we put together big picture jigsaw puzzles. You know, and it was, my mother loved to do that. And, you know, the kids, you know, and we'd get the big 1,000-piece ones. And, you know, it was always a big deal. And they were around for sometimes a week or two before you got it. And some were much more harder than others. Okay, but when you get you're looking for a piece of a jigsaw puzzle. And, you know, you look in and you think, you know, it's got a little color here and a little bulge here. And then you look in and then you pick up a piece. When you see a piece, an individual piece in your hand, it's a fragmented picture, and you sometimes can't even make out what it's a picture of. But when you put it into the puzzle, its individuality as a piece ends, and it becomes part of the bigger picture. And guidance from the Holy Spirit is like that for me. it's like a little piece of a puzzle, but when I put it into my life, it just like fits a bigger picture, or it allows a bigger picture to come into view. And then it's not just even an individual bit of information anymore. It's part of a larger thing. So when I get that feeling of that, oh, this just fits, you know, this just fits into this larger picture. So of course, you know, it's just like, of course, I see the big picture now, and I see the spirit guided picture. And so yeah, I look for that feeling.
You know, it's such a blessing that as a child, you were taught to look for the big picture because it really matters, right? Now, since you have been around in the course since the 80s, that's a long time. How would you say the community of A Course in Miracles has changed over the years?
You know, that's a really good question, I think, and an important one. I got involved with the course around 1980, and it was probably about a year before I really embraced it as my spiritual discipline, so 1981. So that puts me, you know, a 40-year student.
That's a long time.
It was a long time. You know, it's hard to really even remember what it was like 40, but there was no internet, of course. We didn't have email back then. It was hard to even find the books, but there were people meeting and gathering. But there were ways that we found each other. There were periodicals, published things that listed things, and you found out about things. So, you know, in the beginning, there was this, like, when I first started, there was this, like, rush of excitement. You know, there was this, like, exuberance. It was A Course in Miracles, And people were excited, and people would get together and share miracles, and nobody really knew much about the discipline, actually. and people were bringing into it all kinds of, you know, it was a mixed bag, but you'd read a little of the course in a group, and there was this air of excitement and miracles. And then somehow, like in the mid-80s, people started to, quote, intellectually understand the course, and then there were teachers who seemed to have authority who were teaching the course, and I don't know, a certain energy left it. A certain energy left. It was like you would say, well, I had a miracle today. I was driving down and I was looking for a parking place, and all of a sudden there it was. And so I said, no, that's not a miracle. You know, they say, that's not a miracle. The Holy Spirit does not find parking places for you. And, you know, things like that. And it got, then a certain heaviness, this certain heaviness descended, like, oh, suddenly there were like real miracles. And then there were things that, oh, I'm just confused. And so I think for a while, the predominant energy of the movement got very intellectual. And there, everybody was trying to really intellectually understand the course, and many people felt they did, after a while, intellectually understand the course, and people were trying to intellectually understand the course, and maybe they did, but the magic left it. I mean, the miracle is something, a certain lightness left it. That went along, and then there were the copyright trials. And then in 1996, the copyright of A Course in Miracles got challenged. And then in the challenge, these earlier versions of A Course in Miracles surfaced. And the earlier versions were different. And that was like, I remember, I was like shocked. Yeah. I was reading some of the earlier stuff and I go, what? There was more in the earlier material about engaging in the world, and that miracle working was a doing in the world. And this went against the intellectual understanding that had taken hold, which was that it was all about a shift in perception. It wasn't about a doing in the world. And, you know, we learned that this thing that we're supposed to be on called the Great Crusade, which is talked about in chapter number 1, in the earlier editions, The Great Crusade was capitalized for one. So it was a named movement. It wasn't just this casual statement, you're on the Great Crusade. It was, you're not part of the Great Crusade, this proper noun. The Crusade had a slogan. I says, the Crusade's got a slogan? And the slogan is listen, learn, and do. And then it says, the first two are not enough. So listen and learn are not enough. It says, the real members of my party are active workers. So, I mean, this is a different energy that we're here to actually do. So what happened then as slowly these earlier versions got spread, people realized that, you know, the teaching is maybe not exactly the way we thought. And so a real divergence of opinion. So I think up until like the late 90s, there was kind of the thought that there was a party line, and the party line had been established by highly thought of teachers who'd been around a long time. So they were probably right. But that all broke up in the latter part of the 20th century, the latter 1990s. It all broke up, and suddenly there were multiple interpretations of A Course in Miracles, and there wasn't necessarily an authoritative interpretation of A Course in Miracles, and this disturbed a lot of people. But I think, you know, and it disturbed me, but I think it was actually wonderful, because suddenly now A Course in Miracles was left to your interpretation, between you and the Holy Spirit. You know, whatever you and the Holy Spirit came up with together was right for you in that moment. A lot more broadness in interpretation. There was a lot more introduction of these earlier edits. Everything just changed through the copyright trials. Now, in the beginning of the copyright trials, everybody just thought, you know, the Foundation for Inner Peace is going to win, and this is all like, you know, moot, actually. But then the Foundation for Inner Peace lost the copyright. And so the copyright was released, these other versions could be printed, and I think everything changed drastically after 2003 when the copyright was released and these other versions and this multiple interpretations and the movement even proliferated. If you have something you'd like to ask, say.
Oh, yeah, I feel like it is such a personal journey, and I'm so glad you said that for each person that's studying, they might feel it or experience it a little bit differently, because it is that internal guide that's pacing with us right where we are. Like for you, you know, there's a little bit more humor maybe that you're used to, and for me, there might be a little more miracles that I'm used to. For somebody else, they might need a little more reinforcement in a different area, and Holy Spirit is a perfect guide. And so where would you say it is today in this year? Would you say that there's more people headed towards the same common ground, or do you feel like there's still lots and lots of different takes on the course?
I think what continues to happen is the movement continues to broaden. It continues to broaden. There are little pockets of, you know, this kind of thinking about it or that kind of thinking about it. But especially as more and more people get exposed to it and more people get moved by it and healed by it, we have a very broad-based movement with lots and lots of people and lots of adherents. And I actually feel that maybe within the past 5-10 years, the willingness of people to hear other people who may think about the course differently than they do, the willingness for them to hear them and listen to them and not make them necessarily wrong has increased. Yeah. So there's more openness there. You know, it's I think it's a more healed movement than it was. I mean, you know, some of the things you just mentioned about, you know, how you look at the course and how anybody looks at it, you know, in the 80s and 90s, there was really people say, no, you're wrong. Yeah, no, it's this way. And this authoritative, no, it's this way. And that was very, very strong. And that's pretty much dissolved. I mean, people might still say something like that. But, you know, I as you mentioned in the intro, I'm one of the admins of this very large A Course in Miracles Facebook group with about 19,000 members and growing all the time. And wow, it's really diverse. And it's just people. And they have really spirited discussions, and sometimes that, you know, some people may get a little riled, but they always come back to, you know, we're all in it together, we're all studying A Course in Miracles, and isn't it great? So I mean, I really see that willingness to have a broad dialogue. And years ago, you didn't have any groups like that. You know, groups like, we are going to study this particular interpretation, and actually, if you veer too much from it, they kicked you out of the group. There was this really trying to control it all, and now they know they can't. I mean, nobody, you can't. It's just, it's out of control. It's out of control. It's out of control.
I'm so glad those days are gone. That's a good dissolution right there, is that people can speak and share and not be kind of slapped down for their point of view. So that's good. You know, today our topic is practical steps to healing. And I know you do so much in your work and your ministry on even physical healing. So what could you share with us today about those practical steps to healing that people can take with them in their hearts today?
First of all, I guess I want to share that, you know, to me, A Course in Miracles is all about healing. It's teaching us how to be a healer the way Jesus apparently was a healer during his ministry 2020 years ago. I don't think the Course is speaking metaphorically about those things. I think when the Course says miracles enable man to heal the sick and raise the dead because he made sickness and death himself and can therefore abolish both, I do not relate to that as a metaphor. I relate to that as a literal statement. That's a literal statement. We can heal the sick and raise the dead. And that means bodies. I mean, after all, it is a body that appears to get sick, and it is a body that appears to die. Now, we do know that bodies and lives and the whole world is just reflecting our mind. So the sickness isn't in a body. The sickness is always in a mind, in the mind or in a mind. I understand that. Nobody's disputing that. But the body is, you know, a symbolic reflection of what's going on in the mind. So you heal the mind, the body's got to reflect it. It cannot help but reflect it. So if somebody has a challenge, and we all have challenges, of course, says, don't despair because of your limitations. It is your place to overcome them, not to be without them. So, you know, we should never feel guilty, bad, shameful, whatever, because of something that's going on that's a problem. We wouldn't be here if we didn't have those things. And it's actually our job to overcome those things, to heal those things, and then to offer that healing to the entirety of the sonship. So it's actually us fulfilling our function. So, you know, it's, we can embrace those challenges with, you know, high resolve. The whole discipline is designed to train us to be a healer. And it's giving us a whole slew of ways to do it, techniques, and those are going to vary individually a lot.
So say somebody has a really big physical challenge. That seems to be when it's most tough, that maybe you have just an aching back pain or a shoulder knee pain, and it's screaming out, you are a body. And, you know, what can somebody do in that moment of pain to kind of recenter themselves and really offer that moment for a healing?
Well, the Course is clear that when we're in those times that we can't correct ourselves, so that we always have to offer up all of our perceptions about those things, all the thoughts we have and all the beliefs we have and all the perceptions we have. We have to offer those up to the Holy Spirit and ask for help. And you have to ask for help in a real willingness that comes from a real sense of, I don't know. You know, if I knew what was going on here, then I wouldn't be having this problem. But the fact that I've been having this problem means I really don't know. I do not know. And everything I think about this and everything is suspect, and there's probably a lot of errors in a lot of it. So I'm offering it all up to the Holy Spirit, and I'm asking the Holy Spirit for help, for guidance, for a new perception. And when I offer things up to the Holy Spirit, and one of the things I encourage people is the important thing is to feel like you have done your absolute best at offering it up. The important thing isn't getting the answer. That's actually not your job. So the important thing is offering up. So you offer it up, you do a process, you know, I'll do a little burning bowl process. If you know, I got a little thing and I write it down on a list and I do a prayer and I light my little index card on fire and watch the ashes burn, you know, I mean, I'll do whatever I'm guided to do. And I just do that thoroughly until I feel like, okay, I can't do that any better. I can't offer it up any better than I've offered it up. And then you wait. I remember Jesus, when he was crucified, he took 3 days to rise from the dead. He didn't like get crucified and just like, oh, here I am. Took 3 days. So when you really got something going on and you're really asking, you can give yourself at least 3 days, can't you, to get an answer or something, to get some sense of, oh, I think maybe Holy Spirit is guiding me in this direction. And again, it's like things fitting together in a jigsaw puzzle, or healer, or a particular medical professional, or a particular alternative healer. Or maybe you read something that seems to relate to your issue, and I think I want to try that. Maybe you don't have to do anything. You don't know how the healing is going to manifest. And you really have to be open to it manifesting any way possible. That could be something totally unique and different than you would ever have thought of. But, you know, so it's just kind of that process.
You know, this so reminds me, when you talk about turning it over and letting it happen, however it would be, there was a time I moved into a new house and I thought it was a great neighborhood. It really was. But we drove around a little bit because I had a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old sons. And I was hoping there would be some friends in the neighborhood, you know, and so we're driving around, look, you know, on the scout for some friends in the neighborhood. We couldn't find any kids, even though we weren't very far from the elementary school. And so I thought, well, where are these kids? You know, there must be kids, right? Every day we come home from this place, that place, and we didn't see any children in the neighborhood. And so I had this God box and I just wrote it down and I said, God, we need some friends for these boys. Like, where are they? And I just put it in my God box, you know, and I really let it go. I let go of trying to fix it, solve it, drive around. And it's usually within 24, 48 hours. It was very soon after. My boys were down at school and I decided I would go on this bike ride, but we live on a hill, which makes it a little problematic. But I take off on the bike and it never rains in Southern California, but it starts pouring down rain as soon as I started. So I thought, oh, great. I didn't really want to ride in the pouring down rain. So I turned around, but I had to walk my bike back up the hill. And I wasn't very far, and I'm walking up the hill, and straight in front of me, about 4 houses up on the left, were these 2 young boys in Little League uniforms. And I thought, oh, my gosh, like, children, there they are. And anyway, they ended up being really great friends for my sons. And I went up to them and I said, where do you guys live? We've been looking for you guys. My boys need some friends. And they said, I live here. He lives there. You know, they were walking distance from our house. But it was so sweet. You know, God's answer is so sweet. In the Course, it says, you know, when you're answered, you'll know you have been answered. And I felt like that. Why did I get that idea to go for a bike ride? And then it rained and I decided not to make a big deal about it. And that's how God showed me where they were. And just like that. So anybody listening, if you've got some problem, even a simple one or a complicated one, you might try what Tony's talking about, burning it in the bowl or putting it in your God box, your prayer box. And I love what you said about just really letting it go and giving up your need to solve it. I think that's such a big deal. If people are listening to the news today, you know, they pop on the TV and there's the news and sometimes it's a lot to hear. What can they do when they hear things that they are troubled by? Do you suggest they not watch the news, or what do you suggest they do in those moments?
Well, this is a question right now, man. There's some miracles teachers that are suggesting that you not watch the news. In fact, I even saw a person who channels Jesus, a current channeler of Jesus, and Jesus came through and said, stop watching the news. And I think that's a possibility. You know, stop watching the news. One of the things I really realized as I've stepped back a little that there isn't any news. It's all propaganda for one point of view or narrative or another. I mean, there's not really news. If you feel compelled to watch the news, and a lot of people do, try watching more news, but at the opposite, you know, point of view. So if you generally consider yourself a liberal or a left-leaning person, find out what a real popular right-wing channel is and watch that for a while. You know, get the other point of view. At least get a balance. I think that helps. You know, it's the external world. It's a reflection of our minds. Our minds are in conflict, and that conflict plays out there on the world. Hopefully you can develop an ability to watch news dispassionately or having a difficult time with that, you might consider not watching it for a while.
I think so too, that, you know, if you're watching the news, it can be a great way to practice. Like you can look at the news and go, what must I believe to see what I'm watching? And you might think, well, I must believe in separation or different points of view or chaos or conflict. And so we can pause and pray right there and literally turn that over and ask for a healed mind about those things. But sometimes when it makes your fear go up and your peace come down, maybe that's a good time to turn it off and just pray about that. You know, God, help me to stand strong in whatever I do, that you're walking with me wherever I go. Help me to learn how to see anything without fear. And maybe we're not there today, but we could certainly open to being there, right?
Yes. And the other thing is it can give us a really good indication of how healed we are about things. So if you're watching the other point of view and you get really upset and angry, all you're thinking about this is suspect. Right. You just really kind of get that. Use it as a way to just show you how insane your thinking is. And maybe that will help you to disengage a little bit from it, you know, and not take it all so seriously, because nobody really wants to be insane. So, you know, if watching the news, and especially if watching the other side, gets you really upset and angry, that's a good indication that you got work to do and that maybe all of your thoughts really here, you know, you shouldn't pay as much attention to them. Just offer them up and ask for a different perspective. I do think it's always possible to rise above it. I don't think there's any, you know, news that you cannot rise above. And the Course in Miracles does say in the Bible that all things work together for good. So you should be able to step back a bit and ask Holy Spirit for some guidance and see how something good is coming of whatever it is that's going on.
You know, what if, so that's the news, which we can turn off, right? What if you're living with someone that you can't turn off? What can they do? What do you think?
Well, you know, behavioral questions like, what do you do if you're in a relationship and the relationship is problematic? You do whatever you're guided to do. You offer all of your thinking about that relationship to the Holy Spirit. You offer all of your perceptions about the other person to the Holy Spirit. You do your best to affirm that the other person or the people involved are holy children of God, even if they don't seem to be manifesting that much of that. But that's who they are in truth. You try to see how they are that. You know, you ask for Holy Spirit's help to see that. You know, the Course says, dream softly of your sinless brother. Select his thoughtfulness to think about instead of counting up the hurts he gave. So, I mean, there's direction there about how to be. But then you're open to guidance. And if your guidance is to move, you move. I mean, don't stay in an abusive relationship. Your guidance is to move, move. And be ready for that, you know. So maybe you have a value like, oh, I'm a good mate and I stick with my partner and I, you know, through thick or thin, this is the better for worse. Well, it's the worst, but I, you know, those are values. The Course says you got to be willing to question every value that you have. So those are just values. Question them, But if you get clear that your guidance is, to move and to have a different relationship and form with this person, then follow that guidance and trust that guidance and trust, that you'll be cared for and that you'll have the courage and the strength to get through that and to have a wonderful life with whatever you set up next. We always have to be really willing to follow the guidance, and the guidance can be very different than what we think, and it can directly confront things that we thought were very valuable or very high values or even moral values. You just have to be really willing.
I love your practical guidance, because it's always those steps. Everybody's like, what do I do? What do I say? And it does boil down to a discipline of, when you're in that relationship that's not comfortable, that you would be willing to see the light in them. Like you said, that's not easy when you're really mad at somebody, but that shift in perception that you're choosing to do really invites the miracles to occur. I think it gives you that fertile ground where the correction can be made by the Holy Spirit. There's a point with the healed relationship where he says we can turn over a relationship and ask that it be made holy, which I love, that we can go to the Holy Spirit and say, will you take this relationship and show me how it can be made holy? And then we are immediately under the guidance of the Holy Spirit in this beautiful healing. So thank you for that. Those are great steps for everyone today. And maybe because of the present situation, people might feel a little pessimistic about the future. What do you think they can do to perk up in terms of looking forward to a happy future? What steps would you like to see them take?
Well, I think the thing to do is to create a happy now. The future will take care of itself. The future is just an extension of the now. So when we learn, with the help of the Holy Spirit, how to manifest our joy and our happiness and our connectedness and our love in the now, then the future takes care of itself. The Course says future happiness doesn't actually even make any sense. Happiness is always in the now moment. So be not content with future happiness. It has no meaning and is not your just reward, something like that. And I believe, and it's in my experience, that the Holy Spirit can always guide you how to be happy now and to be peaceful now and to enjoy. And to, as I said, gladden yourself now. Do the things that are going to make you happy and joyful and glad in the present moment, the ones that you're guided to. We're not talking about driven behaviors or addictive behaviors, and people challenge me about that one. So, as you're guided, but you trust your guidance, and you make the now as pleasant and happy as you can.
And I guess the key is really just to want that. Number one, we need to want that, and then to invite the Holy Spirit to guide us to that place of consciousness. So, a lot of people would say, well, I prayed about it and I'm still not happy, but sometimes we just have to leave a clean, open space, to be taught, which is so important. Now, you mentioned earlier when we've talked that you had a beautiful miracle in terms of mental health. Can you share more about that?
Yeah, let's try to do the short story.
I like the long story. Go for it.
Okay, my biological father, great. Yeah, he was great in so many ways, and I loved him. And I worked closely with him when I was a child, because we were farmers, and I worked on the farm with him. When the men's movement was going on in the late 90s, one of the things they said, boys are growing up without this connection to their father. Well, that wasn't me. I worked right alongside my father, very young, early age. So. But my father had mental challenges, and I think he was probably diagnosed as bipolar. He was diagnosed as bipolar or manic depressive, and he was hospitalized many times throughout my childhood. It was very traumatic. Mental illness at that time had a terrible stigma. So you couldn't talk. You know, we kind of knew my father went to this hospital, but we were supposed to like kind of not talk about it and maybe make up a story about where Dad was. And then he would have series of electroshock treatments. So, I mean, the treatment that he would have like 6 or 8 of those, and they usually got him better. But these were very, very traumatic things that happened in my childhood. And then when I got to a certain age, I think the very first time was, I mean, I had little skittish things, but I think it was like 28 or 29. For me personally, you know, I observed my father going through these things, and he probably had 6 or 8 of these major episodes as I was growing up. And then for me, when I got to be about the age of 28 or 29, it happened to me. It runs in families. This is what you're taught by, you know, this is what the medical establishment will tell you. And so I sought medical intervention. And I'm not against medical intervention for these type of things or medication. They probably helped me at some point. Anyway, the situation, very severe. The situation is high anxiety, inability to sleep. After some time of not being able to sleep and high anxiety, your ability to actually think, to cognate, your cognition ability is drastically reduced. So it became really hard just to do things because I couldn't think how to do it. Or, you know, everybody has the experience. You walk out of your room to go get something, and all of a sudden you're in the hallway and you don't remember why you walked out of your room. But it's like you just magnify that a lot. And so life becomes very difficult to live. That would go on for a while. Then depression. Then you'd get like, this isn't worth, you know, this life is not worth living like this. This is just, and then you don't want to move and you don't want to get up. So it's the whole gambit of symptoms, and they were severe. So I got through the first one when I was 28, 29. It took about 12 weeks. And I got through with medical help, you know, medication. But without getting into the long story, you know, I did a lot of other things too. The cognitive behavioral therapy and regular traditional therapy. And I was also just getting involved with A Course in Miracles at that time. So, you know, I saw A Course in Miracles as really being sort of a spiritual way to do cognitive behavioral therapy. It was sort of like cognitive behavioral therapy with God. So it was really part of why I really embraced A Course in Miracles so strongly early on, was because I was using it to help me with my mental problems. And so I probably was good for another almost 20 years. And I thought I was like, that's never going to happen to me again. I got A Course in Miracles. I know what's going on. I hadn't taken medication in many, many years. And then I had another episode of it and doctored again. And, you know, and it was just as severe as the first one. The only difference was when you go through it like a second time, you have the memory that you got through it and it lifted eventually. So that's the difference. You know, you're going through all the same symptoms, but in the back of your mind, like, this happened to me before and I got through it. And so that dulls the edge of it a little bit. But I also had A Course in Miracles. And, you know, and I had about 20 years experience of A Course in Miracles by this time. So I really, you know, a lot of guidance, a lot of prayer. I got guided to a lot of things, you know, without getting to all of them, you know, about what to do. And the way it works with me is that when I pull out of it, I'm just like normal again. It's like it never happened. It's like, oh, gone. But then I went in and out of it with lesser episodes that were not as intense, but still problematic, but always, you know, working it with the course, you know, and doing some medical interventions. But there came a point with the medical interventions where the medications were producing so many side effects that were awful that I just couldn't continue on with the medications because the side effects were too debilitating. And then I remember, you know, with my doctors, with the psychiatrist, you know, then they would prescribe a medication for the side effect. And so pretty soon, you know, you're taking 3, 4 medications. I remember at one point telling my doctor, how many medications do you think I'm going to, you know, that I can take? And she goes, well, people take 6, 7, 8 medications. And I go, no.
How are you feeling today?
I had a therapist, not the doctor, a therapist, who was really sweet guy. And he recommended that I look into orthomolecular protocols, which are supplements and vitamin supplements, amino acids. And he gave me a kind of underground book about it, you know, funky little underground book that I read digitally, but it was really not professionally put together at all. But I tell you, it was that piece in the jigsaw puzzle. It just like fit. And I thought, I'm going to do this. And you know, when you do something like with like supplements and minerals and amino acids, it's not like medication. I mean, there's more pills involved. You have to take them multiple times during the day. It's complicated. But I did that and pulled right out of that. And I still do a modified version of that orthomolecular protocol. And I haven't done any prescription, you know, medication in over 10 years, probably. And I feel perfectly fine. And it better, you know, I feel great. This whole thing with the pandemic, you know, I mean, so many things have happened with the pandemic. My church can't meet. My conference got canceled. I've had relationship challenges. My board of directors challenged me at the church.
And you're still fine.
And it was like, I just cruised through all of that. And without any problem at all. In fact, some people, my board, who knew me, I mean, when I went through the episode, you know, 10, 12 years ago, I called a special meeting of my board and said, look, you know, I'm not doing well. My ability to really lead this organization is impaired. But they were very supportive and, you know, and they knew I was doing everything I could. And I guess they had faith, you know, their guidance, they had faith that was going to be fine. And I said, and I told them, I've been through this before and it usually gets better in about 8 to 12 weeks. And when all the things are going on here with the pandemic, you know, my board asked me, how are you doing? You know, because a lot of them are still members. How are you doing? Are you okay? They kind of, they were challenged by some of the things I was sharing. And they thought maybe that was an indication that I was going through some sort of mental episode. But we got through that. And, you know, we had our meetings. And And there's enough of them that are really close to me and that know that I'm not going through any anxiety state because it's, and I never hid it anyway. I mean, that was one thing the course really helped me with was there's nothing to hide. You know, there's no secret. So, you know, as soon as it happened badly, you know, when I realized that I was really going through it, I told them, I called them and I asked for help and let them know what was going on. There's no reason to hide any of that stuff. So they realize that, and they realize it's fine. Some of them still have a little challenges about my whole approach to the pandemic, but I don't have the same belief in it that other people do.
What you were talking about, like doing what's in front of you to do, and you were guided a certain path, and, you know, my husband and I, we've learned through the study of the course that the Holy Spirit will always respond where you are at the time. And it says in the course, I believe that sometimes he'll use illusions to help you with illusions because that's what your mind understands and what it's able to receive at the time. I love that you were just guided to something very simple, that it didn't have those negative side effects in your mind that you had to deal with. You're obviously very clear, very present with me. And so, you know, it's nice to see the beautiful effects of the healing. And I know that's where we're all headed, is just back to that state of peace, wholeness, completeness, right? That's exciting. And I think you mentioned that you went through a few different waves of it, each time a little bit less. And I felt that too, because once you're free of the grip of your own ego, it seems like the next time it's a little easier. You kind of, it's like been there, done that. So you know what to do the next time. And then the next time it gets shorter, shorter, shorter. Sometimes we don't have to go back through it. Who knows why? But as long as we walk with the Holy Spirit, you know, it's like it's guaranteed to be successful that we would get back to our peace about all of it. Anything else you'd like to share before you tell us how to get to your wonderful materials?
I have had the thought that my father was challenged with these things, and he never really had any healing. I mean, you know, you do electroshock treatments and it snaps you out of a particular episode. But then he, in the latter part of his life, he was on heavy duty medications and lithium, and they eventually destroyed his kidneys, and he died of kidney failure. I mean, he transitioned because of the last few years of his life were really awful, actually. So I kind of just really believe that I was able to heal for my father. I had access to more information. I don't know. You know, he was not a highly educated man, and it was a different time. Right. But because of my education and what I had access to and my spiritual development, I could bring different forces. He could not. And so I was able to heal what my father was not able to heal. And so I offer it up for him.
Isn't that wonderful? You know, it says when we're healed, we're not healed alone. So there you are. Yeah. You know, you were able to bring healing to the whole family and for your father. You know,
yeah,
it only takes one of us, whoever's saner at the time, right? So you were able to get right in there and apply some of these things you had been learning. That's pretty exciting.
Yes. And as I said, you know, I worked closely with my father as a child. So I had a close relationship with him. Never had any, like, problems. You know, people had problematic relationships with their parents. I didn't have any particular problems with my father. To feel that we're joined in the healing. And the healing manifested in me, in my body, in my life. But we were healed together.
I bet your dad's doing cartwheels in heaven. He's like, that's my Tony, right? Very exciting. Well, Tony, how can we find your materials? How do people reach out to you? Tell us.
Well, the Community Miracle Center is not hiding. We are not hiding. People can email me at miracles@earthlink.net. That's just the word miracles, miracles, at earthlink.net. You can just put my name in any search engine and I'll come up all over the place. Or you can just search for the Community Miracle Center, either on Facebook or Twitter or the web. We have a huge website. I mean, I've been developing that website since 96, and I just keep adding more stuff to it. So we got a huge website.
You have classes.
I got all kinds of classes. Community Miracle Center currently has 14 active classes on Zoom every week. Six of them are drop-in classes or the Sunday gathering. You can join us for a Sunday service every Sunday. Six of them are drop-in classes, and then the other eight are classes that you enroll and register and pay for. One of the things that's been really important for me over the past, like, 3.5 years now is we developed something called the Healing Team, and I'm the coach of the Healing Team. So the Healing Team are members of Community Miracle Center who get an email from me every night. And it's the last thing I do at night is I write this email. And the email has a paragraph that I write that I feel is about healing and inspiring to the people, to inspire them to be healers. And then we include the list of the things that people have asked us to pray for, you know, healing requests. So we're a healing ministry, and we have been for almost 30 years. So we've always had some way to pray for a current list of things people have asked us for prayer help with. And so this is expanded now to the Healing Team. So there's about 50 members on the Healing Team getting this email every night. They've made an agreement. They'll at least read it. It has this inspiring paragraph that I wrote, has a paragraph from the workbook lesson of that day, and then it has the list. And so I really just ask people to, with your elevated consciousness, being a miracle student, after you've done your daily practice or incorporate this into your daily practice somehow, then just read this list. And the course says the simple presence of a teacher of God is enough. So I really just said, just read this list, join with these people, and your presence will send them healing, energy, and light. And things stay on the list for a month. So I'm very excited about the Healing Team, how that works. We get testimonials all the time from people who are on the list and tell us that certain things have healed or clear up, and then I always share those testimonials. So I encourage people to, you know, if you want a real practical way that you can join with a group that is actively healing on a day-to-day basis that won't take up too much of your time, contact me, and I'll explain to you the whole ins and outs of being on the Healing Team. Come to Sunday service, any Sunday gathering. It's on Zoom. I give talks, but other ministers from the CMC give talks on Sunday. As soon as we can do conferences again, we'll do conferences again, but, you know, can't do conferences right now. We still produce a printed on paper publication called Miracles Monthly. We've done it one every single month since we were formed in 1987. So I think we're on issue 406 now or something like that. 405 issues in 405 months.
Well, Reverend Tony, you are doing some great work in the world, and we're so grateful. Sounds like you're just out there every day. I love those emails at the end of the day. I'm sure that can really help a lot of people. So thank you for all you're doing and your vigilance, your consistency. I mean, it takes a lot to do all of those things. So I just feel really grateful for the work that you've been doing. I know it's touching all of us around the world. Thank you for your helpful tips today and your amazing enthusiasm. I love it. I hope you'll come back and join us again and again so we can dive deep into these amazing topics about healing and relationships and, of course, those miracles. So thank you from the bottom of my heart for being here today.
Well, thank you, Robin. Thank you for all the work that you do. And I know you do other work besides, of course, Miracles TV, you know, other work in the Miracles community. But this is a great venture, and I wish you the best with it. I know the challenges of creating something, the diligence it takes to keep producing it, you know, month after month or week after week or year after year. And I appreciate your kind words there. I never really felt I had any choice. You know, it's like,
I have to say,
like, oh, what else would I have done? I don't know. It's like, you know, I just did my, I continue to do my best to do what Holy Spirit guides me to do. And, you know, every day it's like you get up and, okay, what's the most important thing for me to do today? And so you do that and you just keep doing that because what else is there to do? You just,
wow.
But I appreciate your kind words about it.
Oh, you got it. And you are answering the call. So you are playing a really powerful role in answering that call. So you can hear our heartfelt thank you for just being with people every day and listening to them. And like you say, as a teacher, holding their hand and helping them to take that step forward each day. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you got it. Well, everyone, we are so excited today to be with Reverend Tony Ponicello. And this is Robin Duncan with A Course in Miracles TV. And be sure to check out our website at acourseofmiracles.tv for upcoming events and resources. This channel is freely offered for public benefit, and your tax-deductible donations are so greatly appreciated. Thank you for joining us, and remember to expect miracles and have a blessed day.